Welcome to a special edition of the Experience Star and Exec MBA podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Martin Davidson and Christy Julian. We invited Martin and Christy on the podcast to talk a little bit more about the school's efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion, and I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. We touch on a lot of different topics, Martin and Christy's backgrounds, what brought them to Darden, what they enjoy about the work that they currently do, and how they think about building diverse, equitable, and inclusive communities. So without further ado, here's my interview with Martin Davidson and Christy Julian. Christy, Martin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you for having us.
Now, Christy, I should say welcome back to the podcast. I think you may be one of our first repeat visitors in a non-admissions category to be back on the podcast. Welcome back.
Am I going to get a trophy? Does that, you can mail that. I have a P.O. box. We'll work it out after the podcast.
You know, we do need more gear, more podcast gear. I'll take a trophy. And Martin, great to have you here too. I feel, yes, this is going to be a great conversation. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while. It's the highlight of my week. So looking forward to talking more about you, your background, what brought you to Darden, the work that you're doing, all of these things. And so Martin, since you're our new guest here, let's start with you. Share a little bit more about who you are, your background, and what brought you to Darden.
Okay, well, let's see. I came to Darden, how long have I been at Darden now? 22 years. Joined the faculty back in the last millennium, 1998. And I taught at the Tuck School before then. And really came to Darden because it seemed, well, it was warmer. And it also seemed like a really great inviting environment, a community environment, sort of a place that was not too small and not too large, and close enough, and something that really appealed to me. And I got really excited about the quality of the faculty and the students here. There's so many smart people here. And I realized that I work better when I'm working with other people and who I enjoy working, who I can learn from. So that's kind of what really brought me into the Darden fold. It's been a good call.
Yeah, and since 1998. So, for our listeners who may be interested in what you teach or your research areas, what courses do you teach here, and what are some of the things you research?
Well, I teach the leading organizations, the core course in leading organizations. So, my area here, the area we talk about among the faculty and the disciplines, is the leadership organization behavior area, and I teach LO, so always I enjoy that course tremendously with first-year residential students. But I also teach an elective based on my research. So a lot of the work that I do is on diversity and inclusion and leveraging differences. I've written a book about that and done lots and lots of research, field-based research, consulting, teaching, and just really am passionate about this content, passionate about this. And so my elective, leadership, diversity, and leveraging difference, I teach in the second year.
Excellent. Well, thank you again for being here and appreciate you carving out some time for the podcast. Now, Christy, I recognize some of this we talked about during your previous episode, and maybe repeat for some of our listeners, but some of our listeners who may just be now discovering the podcast may not have had a chance to listen to your episode, which they totally should go back and do that.
Yes.
But tell us a little bit more about your background, what brought you to Darden, and what's the nature of the work that you do here?
So I'll work backwards, and I'll say what specifically brought me to Darden was Martin Davidson. I had been working at UVA for 5 years, and I'd been working in a career capacity. So I was a coach for students, and there had been what I call a little bit of mission creep in my work, in that I was working with STEM students and found that I could not in good conscience work with students who are focused on STEM without really doing some work around diversity and equity and inclusion. And that became more and more of my job. And I thought, I would like to make this 100% of my job. And the position at Darden just opened up at the right time to make the right move to amass the knowledge that I'd started to gain from the Career Center and start to apply it in a more systematic way, and to work with someone who I see as a luminary in the field. And then he made an amazing choice by bringing in people like Laura Morgan Roberts. And I know that was done just for me. And I really appreciate it. And so now I get the pleasure and the opportunity to also learn from people who are setting the curve of what good work in this space looks like and should be. And my focus is broad. My focus is working with alumni, it's working with students, it's working with faculty, it's working with staff to see how we can infuse and drive diversity, equity, and inclusion throughout all facets of the Darden experience. And really wanting to focus on that community aspect that Martin talked about, that is clear and evident as soon as you get here. And so there's a family feeling, and how do we create a family feeling that also, when we look at our policies, when we look at the way that we conduct our work in our business, that is also an equitable family. No favorites in this family. I would know. I'm the favorite in my family. And so I don't want anyone to have the experience my brother has. Fairness for all.
There's a lot to unpack. I hope your brother is listening to this podcast. First of all, Laura Morgan Roberts, just on the podcast, I was trying to figure out how to make that interview a 4 or 5 hour interview. What an incredible person, and just such deep insights about so many things. Came away from that conversation with so much to think about. And she had it was 35, 40 minutes, but really, really rich conversation. Christy, I want to pick up on something that you just mentioned about your career arc. So you mentioned you were doing career work and working with students in STEM, and you had some mission creep, and you started doing more diversity, equity, and inclusion work, and you found that was work that you were really passionate about. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about what really kind of lit that fire for you, and why are you so passionate about this work?
It's twofold, actually. So it's a result of my moving from the Northeast and New York, and having a circle of friends and family that actually was not diverse. All of my friends and family are children of immigrants. We are Black predominantly, went to good schools. And so I have this very closed kind of view of what the world looks like. And then when you pick someone up and you transplant them into a place where they have never engaged with folks that have characteristics that are just so different, and when they themselves are different, all of a sudden that difference becomes so salient, and you spend so much time thinking about it and thinking about what have I been learning? What have I been attuned to? What am I taking for granted? And what are things that people are taking for granted for me when they encounter me? And it kind of became a moment of, wow, those things that I'm hearing that other Black people are experiencing, I live in Virginia and I am experiencing them now. And I am having one heck of a time like really trying to wrap my head around this. So that was a part of it, was really substantively engaging with difference for the first time. And another part of it is, you know, from a values perspective, something that is core to me and always has been is equity. And really being able to justifiably look someone in the face and say, this is the absolute fairest, most equitable process, or this is the absolute most fairest, equitable methodology that we could use, whether it's in evaluating or it's in instruction. That was something that there's a right to it. So my background is also in mental health. And one of the things that we focused on in the program was that, hey, this is something that everyone has a right to. Everyone has a right to thrive. Everyone has a right to be and fulfill themselves and actualize themselves in the best way that they can. And the systems that we live in actively prevent people from thriving. And that is, I can't abide that. I literally, I can't stand it. And so that's kind of what motivates me and drives my passion is I want people to flourish. I want people to thrive. I want to be able to do what I can on a one-on-one basis, which is how my career started, and on a systematic basis to ensure communities and systems where everyone is flourishing, and to shine a light when there are people who are not flourishing and who are systematically being oppressed or being prevented from reaching that full actualization. So it's all about that Maslow's hierarchy of needs and that ever elusive top piece of the triangle. That's really what I'm after.
Well, you can hear your passion for these topics in your answers. I mean, just as you were talking through that, the way that you kind of became increasingly energized as you talked about it. Martin, I'm curious about similar question for you. What attracted you to working on diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Well, you know, first, I got to say, one of the reasons I love doing stuff like this and doing it with people who I partner with, who I enjoy working with, is you get to hear the voices of people. You get to hear their stories. And that, as Christy just said, that it resonated so strongly. It was wonderful to hear her say it because you see it evident in work she does all the time. It also resonates for me too. And you know, kind of in a slightly different way, I'm like low key. I'm just a regular guy. I chuckle because I'm a little odd, but I came into this work in large part because I always did feel growing up, the youngest of three boys in Cleveland, Ohio. I always did, and someone who sort of early on was identified as this kind of gifted child, that I always felt out of place. You know, I always felt like not sort of unhappy because I was well-loved and in my family and that was all great, but I always felt like it was clear that I wasn't like everybody else. And that, of course, that got exacerbated when I ended up going to private prep school, and I ended up going there because I'm a product of the Cleveland public school system. And but the high school I was on my way to, there were race riots. Because, by the way, civil unrest and race riots have been happening for a long time. So I grew up in the midst of that. And so rather than go to that public school where there was all this turmoil, my parents were like, nah, you're going to go somewhere where you're going to be safe. I was fortunate to end up going to this private prep school. And that began this trajectory of me being in predominantly white institutions there in Cleveland and then ultimately to Harvard and Stanford and finally here at Darden. And in all those places, always being mindful and always being aware of the ways in which I stood out, piqued my curiosity. It was like, why? Why am I feeling like I stand out? What's creating that? Are there other people like me? What's going on? What can change that? And so that became sort of a research passion for me. It became sort of a practical passion as I worked with companies and I worked with leaders and started doing this work all over the world because I really wanted to understand and do something to change that experience. I'm working on a new book I've worked on for a few years now on weird people. And been interviewing a lot of weird people. And by definition, weird people, people who within their context, within their team, within their place, they're seen as outliers. They are identified as outliers and they feel like outliers. And I just want to hear their stories. It's like, tell me about that. Tell me what it is that you're experiencing. And I'm particularly looking at those people, those outliers, those weird people who are thriving. They're adding tremendous value. They're changing the way people think. And it's like, tell me your story, because it feels to me like more of that is really, really helpful. More is really valuable. And the extent to which I realize that what it all comes down to is that the more people can express the wholeness of who they are, the more they can be in their own skin, literally in their own skin, the more they can be connected to the world and to the communities and to the people around them without barriers, without the kinds of walls. I'm always mindful as a Black person of the walls and the barriers that I put up when I interact with other people. And they're walls that I've learned to raise because they protect, keep me safe. And part of my learning over the last few years has been, how do you sort of start to move those out of the way? Because the reality is that while walls keep people out away from you, they also keep you away from other people. And so I don't want to get rid of all the walls. I kind of like some of them, don't get me wrong. But there are some that aren't helping me, and some that aren't helping my work, and some that aren't helping the people around me. And I think that's so relevant in this work around diversity and inclusion and equity, because I think that an important step for us cracking this intractable challenge is really to be authentic, real, and at least to explore the possibility of connection with other people. Mm. So I don't know, you just got me going there, man. So
that's fantastic. One of the things I've been thinking a lot about related to these questions of diversity, equity, inclusion, these are huge, big words, right? And it can be somewhat abstract to people at times when you start, what does it mean to be included? What does that look like? To Christy's earlier point, how are you defining equity and the most equitable, solution or approach for people? How do you think about approaching this work that can seem, as you look at it or conceptualize it, can seem abstract, but yet has very real sort of palpable impact on people's lives? So Martin, how do you think about these kind of questions?
Yeah, as soon as you said that, an image came to mind, and I've used it in some of my writing before. And it's that, it's this apocryphal story of someone asks Michelangelo, the great sculptor, sculptor the thinker and David and all these wonderful, amazing sculptures. He said, how do you do it? And, there's these brilliant sculptures. You have this chunk of whatever, rock, bronze, whatever. How do you do it? And he said, well, it's basically I see the figure, I see it, and I'm just trying to get the stuff around it off out of the way. And it's this very interesting metaphor or mindset that I think is really relevant when I think about diversity and inclusion. I think I have this fundamental belief that people are born to thrive, that they're born to be amazing and brilliant and to share their gifts, and that there are varieties of processes and scripts and policies and habits and oppressive dynamics that prevent people from just being who they are. And so when I think about the work around diversity and inclusion, I think about, so it's a set of actions that are designed to remove those things that hold people back. And those things include biased processes. They include dysfunctional human interactions. They include painful internalized scripts that we tell ourselves that we're not good or that we can't do it. It's to me, this work is all about undertaking actions that remove those so that people can be their best. And for me, that equity is intimately built into that, because we all are who we are, and our capacity to bring out that uniqueness, we're not all going to be the same. That's why equitable as opposed to equal. We're not all going to be the same, but we're all going to be able to, in an ideal context, be able to express that part of ourselves. So this work is really about getting rid of that stuff, getting rid of those barriers. And we do it in a systematic way. We do it in a strategic way. There's lots of blocking and tackling and how to do it, but that's what it's about to me.
I'll jump in there and say, as part of my training as a mental health counselor, there's something that resonates very strongly about the bad scripts and about the fact that a lot of this work is also inculcating this into practice, because we have been so conditioned with those scripts. Even those of us that are doing this work, we are actively dismantling those scripts that we have grown up with. And it's very practical, hands-on. It takes stopping and interrupting thinking, and it takes stopping and interrupting policies. And so there's a lot of convergence there of identify the behavior, accept that it's a maladaptive behavior, start to learn a new script that is going to aid in flourishing.
Make so many good points there about there are these things that are keeping us from being our best selves or the best version of our school or society or however you want to think about it. And how do we systematically address that? I want to sort of pick up on where we are right now in history, in the present moment. It does feel like there are quite a few conversations percolating in the wake of the killing of George Floyd and everything that's happening in the country around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And certainly know at the Darden School, we are having these conversations too. I thought that since you're both intimately involved in this work and leading these efforts, I know a number of people have been asking, well, what is the Darden School doing to make the school more equitable, inclusive, and on the diversity front? Do you want to share where we are right now with recognize, you know, this work is ongoing, but Christy, you want to talk a little bit about where we are right now with that work?
Yeah, happy to tee us off. And I will say that where we are right now is also aligned with where the larger university is. And I would say that for Darden, we're in an intensive period of sort of self-study and examination. So we've been hosting a number of forums, conversations, and town halls with the stakeholders that we feel can really help us clearly get a sense of where is this organization and where does it need to go? So our staff and our faculty and students have, we just wrapped up last week a series of town halls where we're soliciting feedback. We've been meeting with our Dean's Diversity Advisory Council pretty regularly to solicit their feedback on, again, issues that they have been laser focused on for a while now and starting to think about how do we accelerate the pace of this work while we can take advantage of the attention and the focus and energy that so many others are now bringing where they might not have had that same attention, energy, and focus. We have been laser concentrated on our Black alumni, and just this past Friday held a forum bringing back over 50 alumni from all across the different years and graduating classes. One, just to be able to connect to each other, to create a space or a forum where people can just see and be with each other and also start to help Martin and I formulate and think about how we put metrics, how we put clear aligned goals that again are going to help to invigorate Darden's energy around this. I pause to say here that I say invigorate Darden's energy around this because I wouldn't be here if there wasn't some energy or some appetite already for change. I wouldn't have the amazing partners and collaborators that I've already developed in my year here if there wasn't energy for change. And so now it's really honing and focusing that energy from that kind of diffuse feeling that it's had to a hyper-focused, laser-focused, and results-focused energy. And making sure that, and Martin uses this analogy, that we have this window and making sure that the window doesn't close. And so in the next few weeks, we're convening a racial equity and inclusion working group and going to use that group to create recommendations for the dean and recommendations that filter out through the entirety of the Darden community and start to spread the love, as I call it, share the wealth of the work that can be done. So that's kind of where we are in the process. And, you know, we invite and have been getting amazing and thoughtful feedback from our community, which is just a testament to how excellent this community is. And the mind share and brain power of people when they have that particular focus. Martin, anything that you would add?
You know, it's so funny, Christia. I'm going to pick up on a thread of yours and then riff on that, which is you made that point about you wouldn't be here, right? If so much hadn't been in place. I think that we could spend the rest of the podcast talking about specific tactics that we've been working on and are currently working on, Brett, to give you that sense of the state of the art, the state of what's happening. There's so much work going on. Christy and I are doing a lot of it, but there's a bunch of people around Darden too who are doing this work, and they're working, they're connecting, you know, students are doing it, staff members are doing it. They're connecting with us and we have an idea of what's going on, but some people are just improvising and doing their own thing in their own work groups. They're taking their initiative. There's just energy. The thing that I would say when I think about what's the current state is I would pull the lens back so we can start to see the whole chessboard. You know, an event like what happens to George Floyd and this, how it is powerful, it's energizing. And it also naturally creates a kind of myopic view, which crises always do. We zero in on the crisis. We zero in on the things that we're doing in response. And we generate statements of this is what we're going to do. And here's what we're going to do moving forward. I think it's always important not to lose sight of the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is, for Darden specifically, is that we have been doing this work for well over a decade. And people who preceded me at Darden, even though there wasn't a chief diversity officer or so on and so forth, there are many, many, many faculty and students dating back to the 80s and 90s who've been doing work, who've been trying to make Darden more equitable and having some success. What I can say about the time, what I've seen since I've been in this position and in and out and so on and so forth, is a steady practice of activity, focus, of resources being devoted to making Darden a more equitable community. We're doing a whole variety of work around faculty development, because it's part of the bread and butter at Darden that we have this number one faculty in the world, and you don't become number one faculty if you don't keep staying on top of your practice. And so our faculty skilling itself in the inclusive classroom, how are we better as faculty? We have a long way to go. We're still learning. We still have many weak places, but I always find that doing this work well, it's not about having an initiative and then checking the box. Mm. Doing this work well is about having a practice. It's about having a way of operating, and you keep doing it over and over and over again. And that's what I would say about Darden. It's interesting too, you know, in the midst of all this, because everyone's scrambling, everyone's, you know, is wanting to sort of make a point during these times. I've been in conversations with lots of other business schools. And I don't say this so much to sort of say, ooh, look at us, aren't we great at Darden? I just say it's more to say there's a state of reality in the United States in business education and education right now. And part of that reality is that institutions are starting to sort of say, hey, maybe we should start paying attention to some of this. And that's a prevailing place where lots of other business schools are. They're saying, maybe we should have a chief diversity officer. Maybe we should start thinking about cases and things like that. I'll say that when I sort of am assessing sort of what's happened, where we are in the midst of that, you know, we've been on the journey and we've gotten some things done and we're more mature in that way. And I think that's great. And we have a lot more to do.
You make so many good points about just the fact that this needs to be about more than just a couple months or a particular period, that there's a practice here, there's a focus that does have more breadth and scope to it beyond a particular moment. I was struck by something that Laura Morgan Roberts said in our podcast conversation. And I want to be mindful of the fact that we are talking about business leaders and MBA candidates and thinking about preparing them, not only thinking about their educational experience, but also preparing them for what's to come. And how do you see diversity, equity, and inclusion, preparing the people who come to Darden for their time here, but also their time, as graduates, as alumni out in the business world?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm sorry, Brett. I have energy around this, only in the sense of, it's so interesting that there's this concept that you have to be prepared in diversity, equity, inclusion, as though the world hasn't been profoundly diverse and inclusive and exclusive, and there hasn't been equity and inequity all over. These have been elements of business and of society forever. And the reason I let out that sound is because this whole idea that somehow you've got to start doing something in business school because it might be relevant to business, when it's always been relevant to business. I think moving forward, what we're talking about is essentially I'm going to catch some flack for this, but essentially our school and many other schools, most of the schools have been basically sending people out of the world who are not particularly competent in this work. It's time to do something different now. We're in a global context. We're in a much flatter world, much more technology that's bringing us together and revealing fault lines and ways in which, we differ and struggle with one another. And business leaders and leaders of society have to navigate that. You can't pretend that it doesn't exist. You can't pretend that, hey, I'll just be colorblind, I'll just be genderblind, we'll all just get along. That is not a tenable place. If you think in those terms, you're operating in incompetence. So our task is to change that, is to make evident that moving forward, you can't do what you need to do in this world. You can't move forward. You can't move society forward if you don't have a mastery of these skills. And that's on us to make sure that every student who graduates from here has that proficiency.
I would also just underscore that the rapid pace by which we're developing technologically, to Martin's point about systems of information and hierarchies being flattened, I think just makes it even more of a critical need and skill, because as you become a business leader that's up in the higher echelons, you're going to be serving a community and serving a culture that has that expectation, that is going out and getting that competence as well. And so unless you want to be completely out of touch within the next two decades, this is something that, and probably sooner, this is something that is going to become so, so, so important. And it's interesting because in my first month, I spoke with alumni and they said, I took all those finance courses and I took all of those decision analysis and et cetera, and the most enduring lessons have been those lessons on leadership, communication, difference. Those are things that I return to over and over again because I didn't realize just how critical they were and how they were the bedrock to moving forward. So I want to be able to do my part to infuse that into every aspect of the educational experience that our students are going to be getting.
That's a great point, Christy, because it's both curricular and extracurricular, right? It's about the holistic thing. What happens when students get here? And your point about the LO classes is well taken. I think I've heard that from many alumni. It's interesting, right? Because we talk to so many prospective students who are very focused on the more technical aspects of the experience. I'm curious to see if this continues to, if this changes anyway, but this is certainly true to the conversations I've had, accounting, finance, really kind of specializing in, you know, we are a general management school, very much about leadership development. Martin, as a professor who teaches in this leadership area, you know, you think about helping students build this competency and the urgency around this. You know, is it about cases? Is it about what happens in the classroom? Is it about the sort of activities that you're asking students to do? Is it all of these things? How do you think about helping students build this competency?
Yeah, I do think it's about all of those things, Brett. I think it's highlighting what Christiane, you both said, which is it absolutely is about all those hours outside the classroom. I mean, one of the things about leadership is that it's always happening. It doesn't stop when you leave the classroom. It doesn't stop when you step off the stage or leave a learning team room. You know, you're always being a leader in life. You're always sort of practicing those skills about being human beings. But I think that developing, you know, mastery, I always talk about it as developing mastery. You know, that doesn't happen overnight. And for most people, it doesn't happen in business school. I think our job is really to provide people with the foundation so that they can get into the world and keep learning. Lifelong learning, I mean, that's what it's really about. And I say that only because I always joke with students when they come in, which is, you know, I teach and consult, obviously. So I teach in the MBA classroom, residential classroom, and in the executive MBA classroom with slightly older professionals. And I teach executive education in our non-degree programs with senior leaders, and I consult with CEOs.
Not very busy at all.
just a little guy. But what ties all that stuff together for me is it's like, you know, if you're gonna be effective in the world, you're gonna have to learn this stuff. And I always I joke that I said, so you know, you can pay me now or you can pay me later, but I'm gonna get paid. And what's important about that is that I hope that what we're doing is we're inviting people on the learning journey, right? I think when you come in and you begin, say, a residential program and you don't know how to open a spreadsheet, yeah, you should learn that. that's going to be really important. And you come in and you mostly can get along with people. It varies for some of us. It depends on where we are. Then, you know, you're going to put more energy into the spreadsheet than you are to the people. And I'm not going to knock you for that, but I think that it's important to be aware of the things that you don't know and the things you have to learn. So if you're going to choose to downplay the people things early on, that's a choice. You can do that. But you're not going to be effective. You're not going to be successful. You're not going to be a responsible leader from our mission statement if you don't invest in those parts of being a leader, being a person, being a human being. You got to do that work.
Christy, one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about lately is the communities and the needs of communities and the interests of communities in some ways are constant, you know, through time, but also evolve. And, you know, the Darden students who are showing up, you know, this August, they'll be very similar in some ways to Darden students who started and perhaps different and always unique. I think that's probably what keeps our job fresh. How do you think about meeting these students where they are and doing the work that you do with new groups of students? Every couple of years, it changes over. How do you think about approaching that?
Well, I have a natural bias towards those individualized connections. I think that that's a natural strength that I have. But, you know, one of the things that I want to do to connect with our students is just to ensure that they know from the outset that I am someone who is an advocate for them, to make sure that I am someone who can be a resource for them. A lot of that comes through the work that I'm doing with our clubs. a lot of that comes through just inviting students to put time on my calendar and they take up the invitation so that I can learn firsthand what that experience is. I can't walk with students in the places where they're spending a large amount of their time, which is in their classroom, but in their learning team. But I can open my door metaphorically. Now I can't open it because you got to wear a mask, but I can open my door metaphorically and say, I want to hear about your experience. I want to hear about your observations, because otherwise everything I'm doing is making a conjecture. And when we talked before about students doing this work, faculty doing this work, I really do rely on them as partners and as folks who can help me understand the real-time information that we need to have that can then be surfaced up to our leaders so that they're not hearing about it 2 years later after a student graduates. And I won't say that the system is perfect, but I think that students are recognizing that, hey, there is an additional person, there is another warm human body who is going to not only take the time out to hear me, see me, and understand me, but is going to act with a sense of urgency to ensure that the things that I may be experiencing are heard and seen by a larger audience. I don't think that part changes on the student side. I think it changes for me in making sure that I'm as proactive as possible in doing that outreach. I went to a conference and a wonderful woman called it Doing Your Howdy Rounds. And so making sure that I'm doing my howdy rounds with students, I'm bringing groups of students together and actively listening. I am amazed and humbled by how much of my insight, how much of my advice, and how much of my professional acumen comes from literally opening my ears and listening to what people are saying. I don't think it happens enough. I don't think it's a skill that people practice enough. And so that is a practice that I am very intentional about with our students. And I think when they are with me, they know that they are heard.
Such a good point about just taking time to hear people and what they're sharing with you. And I imagine your counseling background is particularly helpful to you as you think about, I would imagine the focus that you have to have as you go through that training to listening to what people are sharing with you and kind of processing that.
It doesn't hurt.
I can imagine. So as we wrap up here, we have some incoming students who are listening to this podcast, no doubt, getting ready to start their Darden journey. Martin, what are some things that you would want them to be thinking about, in light of our conversation today and, the themes that we touched on, anything that you would want them to be thinking about or contemplating as they prepare?
Yeah, I'm always of the mind of having people reflect on the front end of any big adventure. It might be something, sort of tangible, like a team project or something like that. But in this case, it's, devoting 2 years of your life to a learning experience. I'm always encouraging people to think, what's my goal? What is it? What's my vision? To put in a very concrete way, on that graduation day, it'll be May something, 2022. What will be different about me then than what I am now? And so it's always ways of just encouraging people to think about, to be proactive in what it is you want to learn, what it is you want to do, how you want to be transformed. One of the things that we always talk about, I think, at Darden is that this will be a transformational experience. You will, no person has ever been the same person when they leave this program as when they came in. And I think that's a really powerful energy, this energy of transformation. And part of your task is to channel it, to be intentional, and to be mindful in what you want to learn. You're always open to surprise. You'll get things that you didn't expect. You'll be challenged in ways you didn't expect. But there's something about having your eye on the prize that I think is really important. And oftentimes, too many people just wander. They don't have sort of an eye on the prize in that way. It's not a fatal flaw. I think I did that a lot when I was in my 20s. I think I wandered a lot. But I do think that there's a real value into having the discipline to think of an intention, to think about what you want, think where you want to go, that it can really serve you well. And that's what I always encourage people to do. Plot your goal, plot your path, and then see what happens as you move toward that.
We had this blog post that ran, I guess, last year, where the student was like, you know, as you think about your MBA experience, really encourage you to seek out those people who are the most different than you are, who have different backgrounds than you, who have different experiences, and kind of seek out difference. I've thought about that a lot in light of our conversation, because I do think, like, you got to stretch your perspective. You know, you need to, you know, Christy, I was struck by something you said earlier, where you were saying, like, just as you start to unpack things that you've taken for granted, or that you always think about, this is the way that the world operates, or this is how things are. When you start hearing people's stories and how they look at things, it maybe challenges some of those assumptions.
No, it absolutely does. And there's something to what Martin is saying about that centeredness that you can bring, and having that core that you always go back to as you're plotting that path, or maybe even redrawing the grid, remembering and focusing on that internal locus of control and finding ways to reaffirm that. Because ultimately, whether it's Darden or in life, that's what you have the most sway and the most control over, is yourself, how you want to show up for yourself and for others, and how you want to make meaning of your experiences and of the new data that you get, and whether you're going to be open to that new data and kind of approach things with a growth mindset. Often easier said than done. So just, you know, go have complete control and be totally fine with everything that you are on the inside. Great. See you in 2 years. Not always the way that it works out. But starting to set some intentionality behind that and starting to have that kind of metacognition, I think, is something that can be incredibly powerful when you are in an incredibly stressful time. Also, get some sleep, which is like rule 101.
Going back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Yes, exactly.
I can dust off that psychology 101 class I took way back when. I haven't completely forgotten it. Well, Martin and Christy, thank you so much for being here on the podcast. It's been such a treat having you here. And I know I speak for our listeners when I say it. You know, I learn a ton through these podcasts. It's great. It's such a privilege to get to hear people's experiences and how they think about the world and how they see things. Certainly the case with this conversation. So thank you for carving out some time. I know how busy y'all are.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
And that was my interview with Martin Davidson and Christy Joyen. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at Darden, that's D-A-R-D-E-N, at virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.